Hello, and welcome to Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else, a series of conversations with innovative educators at colleges and universities around the world. I'm Megan Osterber, Professor of Political Science at Xavier University of Louisiana. And now let's talk about teaching, learning, and everything else. Welcome, Dr. Amy Kortz, to Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else. First of all, let me say thank you very much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
Wonderful. So can we start by having you maybe share with our listeners a little bit of your background? Today, we're switching gears a little bit for our listeners and looking at sustainability in terms of keeping students engaged civically through the arts and humanities. So, Dr. Kortz, how did you get involved in this?
Well, before I took on my current position, which is director of the Center for Civic Engagement at Drew University, which is a liberal arts college in New Jersey, I was a professor in the English department at Tulane in New Orleans. And over my time there, I guess I should start by saying I was a pretty traditional academic. I wrote my articles, I went to conferences, I wrote my books. But over time, it became more and more apparent that our students were not necessarily getting what they needed from their education. And this was indicated, and this was some time ago at Tulane, by a retention problem. So I was tasked by the provost at the time to look into what we could do to improve student retention. And since I was trained as a researcher, what I did was research retention. And what did I discover? I discovered that if students feel a connection to the place, they're more likely to stay. And here we were in New Orleans. I mean, how could you not feel a connection to the place?
Yeah, but you would think that that would just come natural. Those of us that are here think that that's just inherent, right?
But as it turns out, at the time, and again, this was a long time ago, Tulane really wasn't doing very much to introduce students to, you know, the compelling place that New Orleans was. So we started putting some programs in place. We brought the Mardi Gras Indians on campus. We introduced them to the Marsalis family. And we created a living learning community that was focused on getting engaged in New Orleans. And that was really my first introduction to community engaged teaching.
What a great introduction. I can't think of a better way to get started than Mardi Gras Indians and the Marsalis family. Talk about a great start.
Yeah, no, it was quite extraordinary. I learned an enormous amount because I was not, my area of specialty was certainly not New Orleans culture. But I began to get more and more deeply involved in New Orleans, but in also in the power of the pedagogy of connecting student learning to authentic engagement in community. And I started teaching. At the beginning, I was teaching freshman composition classes, and my students were going to Douglas High School, helping out with the Students at the Center program. And they were learning an enormous amount as well. And so I was beginning to see how deeply impactful teaching that connected students to real-world context could be. And as I started to see that, I also, of course, started to learn more about the communities in New Orleans and began to understand that this has to be a reciprocal relationship, that communities have to benefit in a way that they recognize, just as our students have to benefit in a way that we as educators recognize. So that was sort of my start into community engaged teaching and learning. And then, of course, after Katrina, the urgency was just extraordinary. And I, you know, so then that's where I was spending most of my time and doing much of my teaching around connecting the work that I would do as an English professor with the needs in the community. And as part of this work, I started getting more and more involved with community cultural development to see how the arts and culture help revitalize communities, help retain the vitality of communities, and just the importance of those disciplines to what is the fabric of a community. And frequently when we talk about community engaged teaching and learning, we think about the social sciences. We think about the professions or the pre-professions. But in fact, most of us live our lives within a context that includes stories, that includes interactions with other individuals, that includes narratives about our place in community, about our the history of communities, and all of those are humanistic ways of being in the world.
So, do you think that's really why the real world connection is so powerful for students, that it is this narrative that gives them a story to tell and a story to connect to? Is that kind of how you see students? I mean, it is a really powerful connection. I'd love to hear your thoughts on why that's so innate, maybe.
Well, I think that the social sciences rightfully help us understand these large institutional structures and the way we are embedded in them. And, you know, the sciences have their own forms of knowledge and ways of creating knowledge. But the arts and the humanities in particular tend to focus on the individual level of experience. So fiction, poetry, all of the arts are frequently focused on making sense of the individual experience in the world. And for an 18 to 24-year-old, that's their major task at that stage in life, is to make sense of who they are.
Right. That was long enough ago to happily have it in my memory, thankfully, but long enough to be distant. But that's very true. A lot of our students are definitely just trying to navigate the world and figure out where they belong.
Yeah, so assignments, for example, that help students create their own story and share the stories of others can be very powerful in these contexts. I have a faculty member now who's working with a soup kitchen, and her students are doing interviews of some of the people who come to the soup kitchen every day, and they are discovering people a lot like themselves. So it's much more powerful for them to hear the story of an individual who also went to college, perhaps, and perhaps had some tragedy or obstacle in their life that made it important for them to take advantage of this resource in the community, as opposed to reading about, I don't know, statistics, demographics, these, you know, saying to somebody, well, there's a, you know, 20% poverty rate, is very different from introducing them to somebody who is in poverty and hearing their story. So I think we need multiple kinds of knowledge in the world, and we need multiple ways of understanding our place in the world. And the humanities provides one of those that we should be valuing to the same extent that we value other forms of knowledge.
That's an excellent point. And, you know, the liberal arts education attempts to be very well-rounded, and this is fundamental, this idea of being able to connect to one's experience and to the experience of others. So it's great to hear you talk about it. I'm wondering for, I love your soup kitchen example. For those of us that are thinking about trying to approach more community-based learning for the first time and really like this idea of culture-based civic engagement, how do you guide faculty towards incorporating this into their existing pedagogy or in transforming their pedagogy to more appropriately incorporate this?
Well, that's a really important question because when I first started doing community engaged teaching, I made what I've now learned is a rookie mistake that everybody makes, which was that I tried to teach my traditional class and then just add on a community-based component. And it did not work. So this is actually one of the first pieces of advice I give to faculty who are exploring the possibility of doing community-based teaching, is that you can't just add it on to a pre-existing course. You have to actually rethink your class. So I was trying to teach my traditional English lit class at the same time as a community-based learning class. I felt like I was teaching two classes at the same time. My students felt like they were taking two separate classes at the same time. The two pieces were not well integrated with each other, and it showed. So
That
what you need.
sounds like a recipe for disaster. So excellent advice.
Well, it can work, but it's a lot of work. And you're never quite satisfied with the outcome. And it can work primarily because, in fact, the experience of the students is so powerful. But let me back up because you can create a class where the experience of the students is not powerful. So you might want to think about, well, what does that happen? I mean, you can make mistakes from the point of view of designing your class. You can also make mistakes from the point of view of establishing partnerships with the community. So you want to get both of those right. Which means that you need to spend a little time talking to potential community partners, thinking through what your learning goals for your students are and what the goals of that organization are, and whether or not you can find a sufficient overlap between those two sets of goals to have a mutually beneficial partnership. And that's really key. So to go back to the soup kitchen example, the director of the soup kitchen really wanted the opportunity to tell the stories of some of her clients to potential donors for advocacy purposes, and the professor teaching the class, it's an English professor, wanted to take her students through the process of shaping narratives. Around food justice. So they found a place where their interests aligned and mutually agreed upon the creation of this project as part of this class. So these community-based learning classes can be project-based like this, or they could be simply service-based. So if her goal had been simply to expose students to the way a food kitchen works and to the kinds of people who came to the soup kitchen, she could have just asked her students to volunteer twice a week or once a week. That would be a different class. It would still benefit the community partner, and to the extent that it met the professor's learning goals, it would benefit her students as well. So those are two different approaches, and both of them are equally doable and beneficial if designed properly.
Sounds like the first one really takes a perspective that your community partner is in some ways a partner in instruction as well, if you're really aligning your learning objectives. And I think that's a really great idea, especially when we think about how can our universities as institutions also serve our community in real and meaningful ways.
Right, and that project-based approach to designing a community-based learning class can also lead to deeper engagement with the organization. So you might do one project with them, and that might lead to another project. It might lead to a shared grant proposal. It might lead to a research project. So I think that, but it does take more time to plan. You have to be willing to sit down with your community partners and have a couple of exploratory conversations to figure out, well, what will work, what won't work. And depending upon the level of the class and the needs of the partner, that could be one conversation, as it was, in fact, with the director of the soup kitchen, or it could be multiple conversations, as it was with a class that I helped a psychologist plan and create. So that class was research-focused. They were providing a research project for a group of preschools that the preschools were not equipped to execute themselves, but was extraordinarily beneficial to the psychology professor and her students.
Interesting. So this is really taking the service learning model to a next step, if you will, and really thinking about making it a deeper engagement and one that has the potential to really ground a university in the community in ways that it maybe isn't already doing.
I would hope so. And I would say that the most successful partnerships we have here at Drew are partnerships that have multiple faculty members involved, teaching different classes, but often with the same program in the community partners' array of programs, so that we can build their capacity. They know that we're there on a consistent basis. We're not just in and out. So one of the other challenges that community organizations sometimes have in working with universities is our calendar is not the same as their calendar.
Right.
So, you know, they don't take 2 weeks off over the holidays. They're not gone for 3 months in the summer. So, you know, that can be challenging. And so, again, this is why planning is important. Both parties have to understand what the constraints are that the other is operating under and have to be okay with working under those constraints. So the partnership is crucial.
Interesting. Can you maybe elaborate a little bit more on an example of where you have multiple disciplines working with one community partner to have different learning outcomes or even the same learning outcomes but in different disciplines and different courses?
Sure. We work with a settlement house in a close by small city called Morristown that has been serving immigrant and migrant communities as they came through that town for over 100 years. And in the course of developing this partnership, we have had faculty. Right now, the immigrant community they are most involved with is the Hispanic community. We have had faculty working with their ESOL class, working with their after-school programs. We have had faculty working with a program they run to support day laborers in the community. And these have been faculty from the Spanish department, from the economics department, from the English department, from Pan-African and Diaspora Studies department. So there have been a range of faculty who have been involved with this particular organization. And I guess our most sustained engagement has been with their English for Speakers of Other Languages program, which we enabled them to grow from a very, very small program to a program that now serves upwards of 70 clients in 3 or 4 classes a week. And they could not have done that without the consistent presence of Drew students and Drew faculty support in that program.
That's fantastic. Speaking of students, so how have you mentioned at the beginning of the interview that you really saw students not being connected and that it was a retention problem that really initiated this interest. So can you speak a little bit to the ways in which students react? Are students immediately buying in, given that this is a different model than a lot of our colleagues might be pursuing? It's a switching gears of sorts for the students, or do they seem to embrace it immediately and it's an easy transition from their traditional classroom learning in one discipline to their civically engaged learning in a different discipline?
I think that depends. Our experience has been that some students seek out these opportunities and jump on them. Other students are more hesitant. Everybody thinks, oh, this is just going to be a lot more work. In fact, in the class that I was talking about that partnered with the soup kitchen, there was also another placement working with an urban farm. And when the professor first divided students into project placements, everybody wanted to work with the urban farm. Nobody wanted to go to the soup kitchen. And we kind of had to sell it. But when I ran into her midway through the semester, I said, how's it going at the soup kitchen? She said, the students are having such an incredible experience there. So they were hesitant. They were perhaps a little bit frightened of interacting with a community that they felt was alien to them. So they need a little bit of hand-holding, and they need a little bit of a push. But again, it depends upon the student body you have, and it depends upon the individual student. But the other thing I will say is, over time, particularly if you keep teaching the same class, over time, we have a theater class that's been partnering with a high school in Newark, New Jersey, for the past 4 years now. Their class fills immediately. They've developed a reputation. People know that this is a well-run class. They know it's an impactful, even transformative class for them. They know that it makes a real difference to the students in Newark as well. And they could probably offer 3 sections of that class in Philip.
Wow, that's amazing. So it sounds also like there needs to be a pretty substantial support network. I know that's a big part of that's what you do now is provide the support for faculty who are interested. So what exactly do you think is the most important thing that you do for faculty to help facilitate this kind of learning, this kind of teaching?
Well, I think I do 2 things. First, I introduce them to potential partners. I will go with them to meetings. I will help the faculty member and the partner figure out whether or not there's a good fit between them. I also consult with individual faculty members, look at their syllabi with them, help them think about assignments, advise them away from trying to teach 2 classes at the same time. But it's also really important that the faculty member be interested in having a relationship with the partner. So one thing that doesn't work well, in my experience, is for the faculty member to depend on a center staff or a service learning staff to be the relationship with their community partner. If they are not willing to actually have a relationship with that partner, then this is probably not the right kind of teaching for them.
That's a very good point, that this is not for everybody. When it works, but maybe not for everyone. To the idea of identifying potential partners, I think I could arguably say that New Orleans has an abundance of riches when it comes to potential partners. But that can be a problem for those of us who aren't really sure where to get started or how to get started, especially for new faculty who are also new to the community and maybe don't know where to look first. So, do you have any advice for that faculty member that loves this idea, has started to fall in love with the city that they're in, but isn't really sure how to find a partner in the first place?
Well, if you do have a Center for Civic Engagement or a Service Learning Office, that's the obvious place to start because they do know people in the community. The other place I would start is by talking to colleagues who have been around for a while. I know that there are faculty members at Xavier who are deeply embedded in the New Orleans community and would welcome colleagues into their partnerships. So you don't need to reinvent the wheel. There are existing partnerships that you can strengthen rather than thinking you have to start something new or different. In fact, if what you're interested in is impact, you don't want to do that. You want to see where can you add capacity to something that already exists on the ground. How can you add to the success of something that already looks like it's a productive partnership?
Oh, I think that's great. I think that's great insight. I think that too often many of us start from scratch without realizing that there are those who have come before us that have laid a groundwork we can build from. So, in the interest of time, I will kind of wrap things up by just asking you what has been your most enjoyable project that either you have been a part of or that you have facilitated? What is sort of your favorite story of a civic engagement that just worked really well?
Oh, well, for that, I think I'm going to have to go back to New Orleans because after Katrina, we established a partnership that included Xavier, Dillard, and Tulane, as well as the first year it included NYU as well, called Home New Orleans. And that partnership, to this day, I don't understand how we actually did it. Well, it revolved around a class that was taught at three different institutions over the course of the semester. So we spent a third of the semester at Xavier, a third at Dillard, and a third at Tulane, and we worked with five different community partners on arts-based projects.
Wow, that sounds like an amazing experience and an intense challenge in terms of coordinating.
It was so transformative, I think, for all of us that were involved. And I believe it's still ongoing. So there's a partnership that I would encourage your colleagues to find out about and to become involved
Hopefully, a few of the new faculty are listening
with.
and hear that loud and clear. Well, Dr. Kortz, it's been wonderful speaking with you. Thank you so much for joining us on Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else. And have a wonderful day.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to this installment of Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else. For more information, please visit our website at cat.xula.edu. That's cat.xula.edu. Until next time, this is Megan Osterberg.